If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast, and thanks for tuning in. My name is Dominic Swentoski. I'm the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. Austin, Matt, Josh, and Trevor are here with me tonight, and we're going to tackle a topic that's pretty sticky: the ethics of guiding. When does guiding do more harm than good? Because maybe putting people on a river that's already overcrowded isn't the best thing, right? But how much is too much? And who's to say? Also, what are the benefits of guiding? What are the good things? How does it help anglers? Does it actually help people and make our sport or this fishing scene better? Or does it just put money in the guide's pocket and put more pressure on the trout? Let's think about this too. What kind of guided trips are there? Different types of trips are offered across the industry, right? Some guides cater to the first timer, introducing new anglers to the fly rod. Other trips feature education first, with a strong focus on refining the tactics for more experienced anglers. Then many guides sell the river itself, featuring a specific water, while other guides might promise trips for big trout. Some guide for clubs with stocked and fed fish, sometimes catering to lodges with clients that are not anglers, but vacationing guests, where fly fishing is just another highlighted activity. So we've never shied away from the tough questions here at Troutbitten, because this kind of discussion is healthy. I think it's good to stare reality in the face once in a while, to take an honest look at our own actions and look at the state of things that surround us. This Troutbitten group of friends from way back has always had conversations like this about some things that we might disagree on. In fact, when I started guiding, personally, when Troutbitten became, in part, a guide service, my friends and I had some long conversations and disagreements about that decision. There are no right or wrong answers to all of this, I suppose, but we're here to work through a few things, to think about all of this, and to have the conversations that maybe others might avoid. So that's what we have on deck. Now let me introduce my friends that I have here with me this evening. Austin Dando. What's up, bud?
Hey, how you doing?
You're first again. I introduced you first 2 weeks in a row. How's that feel?
Not bad. Keep it going.
Right? You're also the skills series guy.
Apparently.
Right. All right, Austin, you've guided for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. This is going to kind of be my question for everybody here. What do you like best about guiding?
That's a really good question.
Thank you, Austin. Thanks, yeah. Bud.
They're not all good, but when they are, I'll let
That's
you
Trevor's
know.
Line.
That's right. Remember that?
That's a really good question.
That's a good question.
That's true.
From season one.
Fantastic question.
Thank you, Trevor. Mm-hmm.
What I like best, so the people is one thing. We mm-hmm. get a lot of really dedicated anglers who yeah. are into the details, who want to ask questions and learn. And it's really fun to fish with those type of people. But I think probably the biggest thing at the end of the day is knowing that you know you were able to teach someone something.
Yeah.
And you're able to give them something that they can now take home with them and use on their waters wherever they live. And the mm-hmm. fact that, you know, they show up in the morning and they leave and they've gained value from time on the water together. And that's what makes me excited.
Sure. I feel the same way. Hey, Matt Grobe out in Montana. How you doing?
Doing real good.
You got a couple girls there that kept breaking containment your small room that you do this
I'm glad I was on mute there while you were reading because they busted in again.
That's what Trevor said. They keep breaking contain.
Your children.
My
to
wife's
be clear.
Playing blockage right now. Yeah. That's right. She's just distracting with gummies.
They are his legal children.
Hey now.
All right. So Matt, yeah, you've guided for a long time, longer than I have. And I know you've done it many different ways too. We'll talk about a lot of this. But what's your favorite thing about guiding?
Yeah, so I've been guiding since 2005. So through that, however many years that is, I think my favorite part of guiding has become guiding repeat clients.
Mm.
And just knowing them more than just fishermen, right?
Sure.
And you can spend all this, you end up, it's almost like a different tier fishing buddy.
Uh-huh.
And I've gotten a handful, look forward to fishing with every year and catching up on life. And, to me, that's really neat. And the progress, right? You get to guide them on a particular day and they may go away and you might not hear from them for 8-9 months. And then, you can tell they've been at it, working at it, and they're eager to learn. And mm-hmm. to me, that's cool. Right. Because they're into it and they want to learn more. And I really enjoy that part of it.
Love it. I understand all that too. Hey, here's Josh Darling of Wilds Media.
And now.
So Josh, you just started guiding for trout pitting, but I know you've had a lot of people on the water through the years. So what's your favorite thing about it?
Yeah. Matt and Austin both mentioned this, and I've not had to guide a lot of people who are just out for like vacation and want to try fly fishing. And so it's obviously really cool to be able to guide somebody who comes in like ready to learn something with a base of knowledge already. And I think that that's probably going to continue with trout pitting because that's the general audience that I think that this specific guide service attracts, which is cool. One of the things that I think that I enjoy most about it is just like make it enjoyable. I think that it can be intimidating to go and to get a guide and to be the one fishing all day and to kind of feel pressure to catch fish, feel pressure to make the adjustments. And I enjoy kind of just like taking that pressure off and being like, it is on you to catch fish, but we all know the fish don't always play along.
Sure.
And it's cool to give them like a good memory, whether the fish play along or not. Like you can control a lot as the guide in the way that you treat them and the way that you interact and the way that you make light of difficult situations. And that's fun to me.
That's a good point. There's a lot of challenges there, right? Mm-hmm. That are unique, even, aside from the fishing. That's a neat point.
It is a neat point.
Yeah, see? I have good questions. You have neat points. Just neat ones. They're not that great. Hey, Dr. Trevor Smith.
Thanks. I make him re-record anytime he doesn't address me properly.
Never guided before. And we'd all like to know why you're not a fishing guide, but like, what's up? Why not? Hmm. What's the problem?
Well, I don't know. I think that I'm not looking to add more responsibility in my life. I think I have enough. When I go fishing, I really truly enjoy not being responsible for anyone other than myself. And I say that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. I do take some friends out on occasion and I really enjoy that. I'm somewhat selective, I guess, in terms of who I take out. But man, I just enjoy fishing is sort of like it's a sanctuary for me in many ways. And so, and I'd like it to always be that. And I feel blessed to have the luxury of it being that for me. So gonna keep rolling with it like that, I think.
So you have the outsider's perspective.
I've got the...
Although we all had the outsider's perspective, of course, until we started guiding. And I will probably talk about this in a little bit, but I certainly have a different view on guiding than I did before I started guiding. You know, everything changed. But I try to stay honest about it and true, perhaps, to the intentions.
You guys want to dig in? You want to get right to the topic?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, my friends, let's get into it. Let's tackle the hard stuff. So for our weekly podcast topics, we don't have things laid out more than a couple of weeks in advance, sometimes less than that. I've always operated Troutbit in that way, I suppose, starting with the articles, then the videos, and now these podcasts. I like to let things unfold naturally, let topics kind of bubble up from our own conversations and experiences, whatever. And last week, Grope texted our group with a story that I'll let him tell for himself. But it was about guiding and seeing a lot of anglers on the water. And I remember thinking that we don't really have that problem here. I think I even texted the group back that, man, it's not really like that. And then the very next day, I saw two trips from one fly shop, both with a pair of anglers, then another two trips with two or three anglers each. And all of that within a very short stretch of water on one of our smaller creeks. So that was about 12 or 14 people, including the guides and five or six cars. Now, before you think I'm saying those guides shouldn't have been there, I was guiding as well. So I was adding another two anglers and me to the water. We had started earlier and I had no idea how many more people were just around the bend until we relocated after lunchtime. Some of you out there will hear this and think that within maybe an eighth of a mile of river, that's not very many anglers. As we've talked about recently, everything is about your frame of reference, right? But around here, we definitely didn't see this many guided trips just a few years ago. But now, especially in the peak season, there are often more guides and clients than your average fisherman. So where am I going with all this? What are we going to say about all this? I'm not sure, but let's talk about it. Hey, Matt, do you want to open things up by telling everyone what you told us the other day in the text?
Yeah, I think we were talking, you know, just about guiding in general. And yeah. Let me preface by saying, look, I said it from the beginning, I've been a guide in some capacity since 2005.
Yeah.
And so I've guided public water, private water, you name it, right?
Yeah.
I guide less now. I'm fortunate to not rely on guiding as my sole income because I'm at a private ranch. We do a lot of different things and I hire guides. I've been very in the scene for a very long time.
Sure.
And because of that, I fish on my own a lot, right?
Sure.
And so I think I bring an interesting opinion to this whole conversation, right? Because I guide and then I fish for myself a lot. And so we were talking about just traffic.
Yeah.
On certain rivers out here. And it's, look, this isn't something that isn't talked about and is in newspapers. It's a pretty hot topic out in Montana right now about overcrowding, you know, and I've seen it. I experienced it, whether it's, you know, some of these outfitters are able to put, you know, up to 15, 20 boats a day on a particular river.
A day.
And that's only one outfitter.
Wow.
Right. And there's hundreds of outfitters out here. And so it's going to bring up this discussion as we get deep into it, but when is too much too much?
Sure.
When is it okay to put 15 boats on a certain river in one day, or is it never okay to put that many boats on a river in one day? And I think, that essentially sparked, right? I was up, you know, a little perturbed and it sparked this conversation, and I'm anxious to hear what you guys say. And I don't even know, you know, how do we dive into it? And I think, Dom, a good idea, in my opinion, is to break this down on the trips, because there are different trips. And I think everybody could have an opinion based on what type of trip it is and where you're at regionally, right? Could play, you know, some opinions on guide stuff. And from my experience, there's public water guide trips.
Okay.
There's private club guide trips.
Okay.
There's private access guide trips, which I do a lot of private access fishing trips. On places that are barely impossible for the public to reach, right?
Yeah. They'd have to walk a long way in Montana.
Correct.
Up that stream.
It's basically inaccessible, right? Mm-hmm. But having said that, you could get there if you really tried to. And what am I missing? Which ones am I missing?
I don't know. You named three.
What else is there? You're talking about types of trips. You once described a sort of trip as a Disneyland trip.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Who's booking the trip, right?
Mm.
Is it someone that's booking a trip to a lodge?
Mm.
And oh, by the way, we have access to this stream and they just want to fish.
Yeah.
Is it someone that's really wanting to enhance their skills? They already have a base skills and they want to enhance it and hone in on a particular skill set. Is it the Disneyland trip? When in Montana?
Yeah.
I want to fish like Brad Pitt.
Even though they never fished before.
Even though they never fished, but when in Montana, you damn better get on that drift boat and fish down that river and catch your whitefish.
Catch your whitefish.
Dang. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the gist of it. And there's people that, you know, have opportunity to book exclusive waters, whether that's being a part of a private club or, right? And they have, most of those places have guides. You can take your guide out and go out to those rivers.
You kind of opened it all up right there, didn't you?
I did.
That's good stuff.
I joked around with you guys. I was going to start this podcast by saying, welcome to the Hypocrisy Podcast.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's right.
that though in itself, I think is good to acknowledge.
Yes.
Maybe we should start out in that aspect because there's no secret. You know, we're located in Central PA and this is Trout Bitten Podcast and we have thousands of listens a month and that, hey, there's extra cars in the parking lot. Well, it just so happens that, you know, we gain a lot of traction and attention to our own area. Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth addressing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's almost a little bit hypocritic or, you know, whatever.
Hypocritical.
You know, it's a little bit hypocritical to say, oh, the parking lots are packed. Ah, yep. I'm so upset.
Yeah.
But then we run guide trips and we talk about our area.
Absolutely.
And it's easy to get bitter about that,
mm-hmm.
Like in a negative sense. But it's also easy to think about it for me in a positive sense that these people are getting to experience something that we also love. But it is somewhere you have to draw your own line, right? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you consider to be too much or too little? And I think for some people, any at all is too much.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of us, there's a happy medium. And you're never going to please everyone.
Whether it's after a fishing trip or at a backyard fire, you can bet the Trout Bitten crew has a case of New Trail Broken Heels along with us. It's honestly our favorite beer. This hazy IPA is smooth and full-bodied. Hand-selected citra hops lead to notes of bright clementine and juicy ruby red grapefruit. Broken Heels is a keeper. New Trail beer is proudly brewed in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and delivered cold to your favorite craft beer retailer every week. At New Trail, it's not about being the best angler. It's about getting out there. So enjoy nature's moments and reward yourself for a day well fished with New Trail Broken Heels. It's Trout Bitten's favorite beer. Precision Fly and Tackle is a family-owned business with a passion for the outdoors and a sense of adventure. They are anglers who enjoy every moment spent on the water with family and friends. Precision Fly and Tackle carries the widest selection of Euro rods, reels, lines, leaders, flies, and accessories. From the beginner to the advanced angler, Precision Fly and Tackle can outfit every angler, no matter the budget. Visit them online at precisionflyandtackle.com. Then use code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your order. Gear up with Precision Fly and Tackle for your next adventure. Just a few years ago, Austin, before I started guiding, I'd have been like, man, what are you doing? You're guiding 100 days a year. You're bringing people to this region and you are putting them on some of your favorite waters. They're going to come back. They're going to tell their friends.
Yeah,
what about the secrets? Right? You know, what about spot burning? And there's a lot of stickiness to it, right? There's a lot of lines that, I draw it right here. Oh, I'll draw it here, but I wouldn't draw it there. Well, 5 years ago, I would have drawn it further back. You know, but now I'm over that line, but that's okay. And I think people looking from an outside perspective might think, well, it's just because of the money. You're just guiding because you're making money.
Mm. Yeah, sure.
I mean, quite honestly, yeah. I don't think many guides would deny that, you know, the money is part of it. Maybe a lot of guides would say that it is most of it. if they were being honest. Well, trout bitten trips are only becoming a small part of what trout bitten is.
Sure. Yeah, year after year, you've done a little less on the guiding front, right?
Right. I continued to guide less and less. But when I started guiding, I was guiding 5 days a week. And that guiding allowed me to get out of the music business, which was, I was in for 16 years. So I moved out of the music business into guiding. It did provide me, it was my full-time gig for a while, as then guiding full-time allowed me then to produce the podcast, the videos, more articles. And now Trout Bitten has branched into what this is. It's a media company and we do all this other stuff. So now I guide less. But guiding allowed me to do something different in my life. And it did. It provided for my family. And yet I guide on public waters that, oh, just a few years before I started guiding, I would have looked at me upstream and said, man, there's a guide up there with two people.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to go high hole him.
Right?
Dom, just because you have a unique situation in that fact that you've guided a lot and now you get to guide less and some of your lines have changed, could you talk about that mindset maybe that changed from when you weren't to when you began and how you, I don't know, sort of reconciled the change and felt good about moving your lines to different places?
Well, I've always been stubborn about what I want to do and how I'll do it, which is why I was a musician for 16 years. I wasn't making much money, but I was doing something that I really enjoyed doing. And my wife and I have always made decisions on what would make us happy. And I decided that I would guide because I knew that would make me happy too. I also knew that guiding wasn't going to make me that much money, but it did give me a chance to kind of move out of the, I knew it was a bridge. I knew I wouldn't want to guide until I was, you know, retirement age. But how do I reconcile those things? Well, it gets into what the value of guiding is. And maybe we can all talk about that. What we think are good things about guiding. You guys all got to say what your favorite thing about guiding is. For me, it is those relationships. It's almost everything you guys already said. I know that I enjoy most teaching people what I think are good tactics, because I think there's a lot of bad tactics being taught. Not all guides are necessarily well-trained or even good anglers, right? And that's fair. I mean, not trying to bash on any or all guides, but I like to show people stuff that I really think is going to help them for the rest of their life in fishing and stuff that they can take away from our one trip and go learn a whole lot more. I book trips and run my trips in a way that I'm going to teach people as much as I possibly can. I ask people to bring a lot of questions. I tell people, I'm not promising you a lot of fish or big fish. I don't even book my trips like, hey, we're going to fish this river. There's a lot of great access here to great rivers, and that's another advantage we have. And we run trout bitten trips for education. And I like knowing that people are going to learn something good and take it wherever they go. And they can continue to kind of build on those things that hopefully I was able to teach them, that you guys were able to teach them. That's what I enjoy most. Did I answer your question, Austin?
In a political way.
Huh. Ask me a hard question. I'll try to answer it.
I was just wondering, you know, how your perspective before guiding to guiding, where your lines had changed.
The legacy.
You could look back and see,
legacy trapping.
Absolutely. And that, I said in the intro that we had some arguments. You know that.
Oh yeah.
You guys here know that. We had some arguments, and not everybody was in favor of me ever starting to guide. And because, hey, you'll give away the secrets, not just of spots, but of tactics. One of my ways of dealing with that, Austin, was to decide I will never in trout pitting like spot burn. We've had a full podcast on spot burning. So I don't name stream names here. I don't write stream names on the website. But then again, on the guided trips page, I'll tell you what waters we fish. People have to know what waters they might fish if they're going to hire you as a guide. There it is.
Yeah, nature of the business. You have to be able to say that.
Yeah. So what I think now, Austin, about guiding is very different than what I thought before I started. It is tough. It's a tough question. I guess I feel proud of it. I feel proud that I guide. I feel happy to know that I've made an impact on a lot of people's lives that have come to see me, learned a lot.
Right.
You know why I feel that way? Because I get texts and emails back. People will show me a fish or just even just write a couple sentences like, hey, I learned so much. I pass this down to my kid. I've had people tell me that, not to be too dramatic about it, but like, oh man, trout bitten like saved my life because I was into this or that. Not again, like not to get too specific about it, but like they needed something in their life because they were into bad things in their life. And all of a sudden fishing gave them a reason to get out of those bad things. I mean, that's a serious, you guys all have heard stories about this. That is for real. That is the value, I think, in fishing well. But if you go out there and you say, I'm going to get into fishing, you don't know anything about it. You go out there, you catch nothing like 4 or 5 times, you're going to give up. Most people, I mean, are going to give up. But if you hire a guide who perhaps can show you a few things and then kind of give you some things to take with you and to really work on, you have a purpose, you have a reason that you're fishing and a direction. And then you go out and then you start to catch a few. And then the next time you catch more than a few. And then all of a sudden you're catching 10 or 15 fish every time you're out. Now, I don't know, you have that new purpose. I mean it. People's lives will change because they caught trout.
So Dom, let me backtrack for a second.
Yeah.
Is it safe to say as a group here, we're speaking about this because the issue arises with guiding on public water.
Okay.
Is it safe to say that's the only time where there's any bubbling, you know, feelings towards the guide, right? And the reason we're having these conversations.
No.
Clubwater will do it too.
Right. I would like to agree with you, Matt, but I think the problem with Clubwater and guiding private water is now it's going to, one piece of private water spawns the next piece of private water. Right. If you got a club down here and they're making $200,000 a year because they have a farm and now they lease out, you know, a piece of water that runs through that farm, then the next farm down is going to lease it out for $200,000 a year too. So
it's more than just pellet heads and feet and stalking over wild trout for you guys.
I'm just saying it propagates. It keeps going. So I can't agree that it's just a public water thing for me. Although I get where you're going.
I think it's real quick, though.
Yeah.
It's regional a little bit.
Okay.
Because you guys can lose access, right?
That's a great point.
And out here, you don't lose and I must be, every state's different.
Technically, you don't lose access.
Out here, you don't lose access. The state land, the public land, is the public land, and then a bridge is fair game. So unless you have enough property way back in, but that's not saying I couldn't get there if I wanted to get there. Mm-hmm. So where I'm going with that is for me and my location, I don't have as much of an issue at all with private water as I did back in Pennsylvania because of what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Where out here, it's like, they're paying to get access and good for them. Right, because the public doesn't affect the public. All right, and I just wanted to specify that.
Right, it's so big between those bridges, so to speak. You could have 10, 15, 20 miles between bridges. And here we might have 2 miles between bridges.
Yeah. Right, no, and I get that. So I think it's good to put that out there for
everybody. Cool too. And you have the difference in stalking here versus you're not allowed to stalk your private stretch of water. I mean, if a person owns a private stretch of water, well, it's not private, but if a good trout stream runs through a property in Montana, Matt, can they stalk it?
No, they can't touch it.
They can stalk it here.
Yes, and that gets into more layered issues, right?
Exactly.
Almost here, sometimes you see it as a positive refuge.
Interesting.
Right? There's these, you know, large chunks of private land that might not get fished more than 4 or 5 times a year. And you know what? If those trout can get up there, good for them, right? They're in there spawning, and that can be a good thing by the time they get back into the main rivers.
That's a message that we hear in this area from, you know, some of the club owners. They'll say, we're protecting these trout, you know. They don't see so many anglers, so much pressure.
Sure.
Different. I see plenty of people.
And you're stalking over top of them. Almost all the clubs here are stalking over top of them. Show me a club that's not stalking over wild trout. Show me a club that's not stalking. And most of them are stalking over wild trout. Many of them are stalking over wild trout. That's a big problem. That's another whole discussion. We actually might have that this season if we really want to dig into the tough topics.
I wanted to stick on the negatives real quick
yeah, okay.
to make this all negatives. What poor expectations does that artificialness set to the next guide, you know, that has the guy that was at the Pellet Head farm and they actually come out to a wild trout stream and, you know, why aren't these fish all 9 pounds and eating cork flies?
I know I've had that, right? And it's always an interesting feeling when you get to, like, let's say lunch halfway through the day.
Yeah.
And you're catching wild trout that are 12 inches long and you're having a blast. And then the guy wants to show you, well, I was out last month with this guy from this outfitter and, oh, look at these. These are 5 pound rainbows. And he's, you know, showing you all these big rainbow pictures and you're like, yeah, that's great. But that's the expectation, right, is not going to be met. The expectation of, you know, what you're going to experience in a wild scenario versus a manufactured, you know, manicured scenario has to be very different. And there's different tiers of excitement, I think, where you could catch a 12 inch brown trout and be just as excited about it or more than when you catch a 20 inch rainbow trout or stock trout in a club stream.
The scrub noses.
Well, Austin, that, I mean, that's part of the good thing about guiding, right? Like some of the good guides, you educate these individuals. Maybe it doesn't resonate.
Yeah.
But to me, that's a really good part of guiding and what the guiding community can brings, not can bring, but does bring to clients. And it's education. It's, hey, do you know this?
Good education.
Correct. This brown trout, this wild brown trout, do you know how much, you know, it's gone through to sustain generations upon generations of fish in these watersheds and vice versa out here? I really try to harp on the Yellowstone cutthroat trout that's in our neck of the woods. It's, you can't catch that anywhere. I mean, there's a small part of the world you can catch that fish, and it's not 20 inches. It might not even be 17 inches, but it is pretty cool in that regard, right? Just like your brook trout, you know, there's a lot of cool things that people, I think, just take for granted because of the artificialness that happens in our sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a good thing. And then there's the bad thing, right?
Because you can educate in the wrong way. Exactly. And if you're guiding a club, you're going to tell people, look at the size of that trout. Look how big he is. He's 28 inches. He's a big rainbow. Look how fat he is. Forget that he's all ugly in every other way. And they're educating people to believe that this big 28 inch pellet fed, stocked, and then continued to be fed every day trout is this big special prize. Again, that's almost its own discussion, but that is a type of guided trip that you can have. That is a type of guide, in fairness, that's, I think, quite different than a guide who goes out and guides, I don't know, public water, regular access, wild trout.
And you might,
or even just stock trout that are not fed and then getting to crazy proportions.
Yeah, please. And you might not think that if you're guiding that type of situation, or if you own that type of situation, or if you're fishing in that type of situation, that you're educating the whole sport, you know, but that stuff leaks. Social media has easily allowed that to shape the whole picture of what people think when they think trout. And that's why, Austin, you've got people like that saying, like, what is this that we're catching? Yeah, they're pretty. But what is this when I caught, like, these last week or these last month, you know? I was going to ask you, like, Austin, do you, in those situations, do you shoot them straight?
Yeah, it's...
Oh, yeah.
Right? And that's the thing. Because my first job, I consider, is to make sure that client is having an enjoyable time.
Sure.
So I want them to have fun.
An honest time, though, too. Like, I always shoot them straight. Always.
Yeah, sure. But if they know, like, what they're getting into, I'm not going to talk down to you because you went and caught a rainbow trout and you had fun doing it.
No,
right?
Of course
I don't care. But if it comes into the conversation of conservation, of stocking over wild trout where they can't exist, then it becomes a different conversation.
Mm.
And then I'll ask them, and they may willingly tell me often where they were. And I'll ask them, hey, did you catch any wild ones while you're in there? And then it kind of leads into the opening up of that discussion. But it's never my intention to make what they find fun seem illegitimate.
Sure.
Good way to put it.
The landscape is changing for trout anglers. No doubt you've already noticed another truck at your favorite access point and seen more anglers on the water. For those looking for new challenges and fishing opportunities, Trout Routes has the data to help you avoid the crowds and explore new public water. Trout Routes has mapped more than 50,000 trout streams across the country with curated, detailed maps of public land and access points. Trout Routes has developed integrated and interactive data, putting the tools in your hands to research new water and help you navigate in the wild to know exactly where you stand in the current. It's still up to you to find those deep pools and undercuts, but Trout Routes helps you get on the water, connecting you with resources like fly shops and stream gauges for trout water across the country. Download Trout Routes in the App Store today and visit troutroutes.com to learn more. For over a decade, Smith Creek has helped anglers just like you to free up your hands, hold your gear within easy reach, and keep our waters clean. Smith Creek's family of patented accessories are tested guide tough and backed by good old-fashioned customer service. Crafted from rugged materials like anodized marine-grade aluminum and UV-resistant nylon, Smith Creek products are hand-assembled with pride and built to last. To stay up to date on their latest specials and new product releases, be sure to follow Smith Creek on Instagram at SmithCreekNZ. Quality you can depend on from a brand you can trust. That's Smith Creek.
Trevor, you've been sitting on something for a while.
Yeah.
You have a lot of thoughts, maybe. Don't you? And a new haircut.
I do have a lot of thoughts. And a new haircut. Yeah.
High and tight.
High and tight. I'm just kind of curious what the role, if you guys see as guides, if you guys see that the economic status of the client plays into their expectations on the water. And it might be like an unfair question, because I don't want you to feel like you have to necessarily like burn your clients. But I just, you know, like I think that my observation is that people who have the resources to produce for themselves, say that hunting trip that they, you know, I want to shoot an elk. So I'm going to drop 10 grand and go shoot an elk, the type of elk I want to shoot. Or they are able to kind of a la carte experiences for themselves in the outdoors based on their wealthy resources, you know, or the fact that they have resources. Do you find that there is a consistency to the type of clientele that come to you and really desire something that you don't want to support giving them, and those, you know, or do you feel like the majority of clients that you attract are able to kind of engage with your guiding in the way that you hope that they're going to, or that you want to provide? And how do you filter those out? You know, how do you, before they even get on the water with you, decide this is somebody I don't want to guide, or this is somebody I do want to guide, or do you have that option?
I'll speak for Troutbitten.
There's a lot of questions in there. Yeah.
There are. I'll speak for Troutbitten and say that I feel fortunate. I'm booked like a year in advance now. I don't even open up the next year until I start the season of, well, I didn't open up 2025 spring until I started 2024 spring, right? And now Austin and Josh and Bill guide for Troutbitten. We're in a good spot, and I feel grateful for that. To answer your question, Trevor, I mean, really, I do turn some people away. If somebody comes to me and they start saying, well, I want to catch a lot of fish, I want to catch big fish, I'm like, well, then go to a club. Or I'll just hand them off to a fly shop down the road. Almost everybody that comes to us, Austin, you can vouch for this, Josh, you can, Bill could if he was here, almost everybody, more than 95% of the people say, I don't even care if I catch a fish today, I just want to really learn this and that, X, Y, Z, and I really want to learn these tactics.
It's true.
Everybody says that. Mm-hmm. And if they don't kind of come to me saying that, then I often, I kind of realize that they won't be the best match for Troutbitten. But I think almost every guide would love to be in this situation.
Yeah.
There's nothing special except that we've built this resource that is deep enough for people to understand what Troutbitten is all about. If you don't already kind of match, you know, our ideals, our way of thinking, you're not going to like us anyway. So you're not going to get in touch. So almost everybody that does get in touch has similar goals. It's like submitting a really big resume that's really deep, that says everything about you to your employer. And people won't hire us if they don't know they're a good match. But again, I don't know a guide who wouldn't love to be kind of in this position. We get people who seriously are okay if they struggled to catch fish that day because they learned a lot. So I think educational trips are enjoyable, are fun. From this guide's perspective, that's fun. And that's a different way of guiding than somebody who promises you, you're going to catch a big fish today. I am going to get you on a whole bunch of fish today or a big fish. It's different.
Yeah. What about you, Grub?
Yeah. So I think the state, just to where I'm at, manages things in a way that prevents that from happening because there's not like a, you know, there's no artificialness to it. So the person
that's a great point
that's experiencing it, you know, maybe it's in a private section.
Yeah.
But technically I could still fish that same water that individual can.
Mm-hmm. So it can only be set up so much. I'm sorry to interrupt
right.
you. Like that's
okay.
a big deal.
Right.
It can only be set up so much. And in PA, you have this ability to take 200 yards of your river and oh my gosh, just stock it so full.
And it's an issue. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's I get where that frustration comes. Here the expectation's set. What you get here is, you know, maybe unpressured fish. They're the same fish that are everywhere else. They're just likely maybe seeing less flies, but that's just a result of pure want, right? Like a guy like me or you guys, we could get there. I guarantee you I can get there if I want to put that effort into it. You know, but this, at the same time, I can find something more secluded. All I have to do is drive into Yellowstone or the Bob Marshall Wilderness, right?
Yeah.
Nobody owns that.
Right.
You know, but you get what I'm saying. Like it,
I do.
That stuff doesn't seem much pressure at all. So I can get what other folks are getting out here. So I think we've established a very important thing here, right? It goes back to that, you know, stalking a 200 yard. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. Stalking kind of changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. I feel like that's coming out, even, and we all know this, but it's even coming out more in the discussion.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that so much until we really started talking about it. Trevor, did we answer your questions there?
I think so.
What else?
And I wanted to sort of clarify, I'm not in any way, like talk about the hypocrisy podcast. I'm not trying to point a finger at all wealthy clients and say that they're the ones that are going to be a problem in any way. You know, we can commoditize all of our hobbies to some extent or to our resources to some extent, I guess, if we're allowed to. And unfortunately, Pennsylvania's laws and allow us to kind of be in this situation like you're talking about, Grove.
Yeah.
I think it's unfortunate because I do think it sets up this enmity between us and maybe that private experience or those, not because we want that experience, but, you know, but because we're disappointed that that's allowed or that that's even, and beyond allowed, that it's even revered at times.
And to make things even worse, like you, the streams there have the capability to reproduce.
Goodness,
Right. And so that's what makes everybody even angrier, right? You see the potential, you can travel across the country and then you go back there and you're like, whoa, if they just manage this, little different, right? All of a
big
sudden
change.
Things would change in a positive way. And I think, you know, and it's something people will keep fighting for, but I think that's the reality of it. It's like, holy moly, like we have something here. We're just stubborn in our old ways and we won't change.
Right, to touch on like your reality is a great way to put it. So in Montana, we talked about your access laws and how they're pretty, pretty open.
Best in
and
the
welcome.
Country.
Yeah.
There's no question.
So I texted a group a couple of days ago, a stretch of one of our favorite rivers is now completely posted and it's even fenced off. A stretch of river that's been public as far as I've ever known it. And it's one of my favorite places in the world to ever walk in to a stream from. And one of my friends is close with the landowner and he got in touch with the guy who posted all up and asked him, hey, what happened here? And the landowner's response is, well, I got so tired of people guiding my property and walking in and using it that way. And I was sort of surprised because it was very timely to this discussion. I wasn't seeking that answer out, but that's just kind of what I got.
Interesting.
And it hurts to hear that, but I know... and you don't know what those guides are doing, right? You don't know if they're making a big scene, you know, if they're making big commotions, or if they're simply just walking in and there's nothing you can do, you know, about the guy walking in or whatever. But it is an eye-opening reality to what we have to deal with.
Well, but can we bring it back to the question then? Like, how much is too much? We're talking about guiding, and we haven't really answered that question. Like,
no,
what's,
not at all.
What's too much? Is it, obviously that guy had too much.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. Well, also, right. Why do you think it bothered him that people were guiding on it versus just fishing on it?
I don't know. And, you know, I've thought about that myself. I don't even know how he knows they're being guided besides just looking out the window and seeing somebody standing there without a rod.
I think that's obvious, right? But, you can tell. I mean, when I drive down the road, I'm like, oh, that, yeah, it's a guide.
Maybe it's the same truck parked there every day and the same guy's walking down your property every day. And you're getting sick of it. And you're like, hey, spread out or just stop pounding the access that I give you as a privilege. Yes, because it is private land.
Right.
It's not public. He doesn't or she doesn't have to have it open.
Yeah.
And it's something that we have to respect. And when you start to overuse or abuse the resource, then maybe that landowner gets frustrated.
Right.
Right. Right. Trevor. And they're monetizing his property. And that in his mind is something different, you know,
That's
than
fair.
Somebody just enjoying it.
Right. Yeah, they're profiting from a goodwill.
Yeah, exactly. His generosity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You made a good point, too. If you were guiding, I'm sorry, but if you were guiding 5 days in a row and four of those days are on the exact same water, public water, where other anglers would like to fish too, stop it.
Right.
Yeah, that's very fair.
Maybe I'm wrong about that.
No,
but
that's valid.
Especially if it's that kind of access, Austin. I've been right down that exact property you're talking about.
Yeah.
I have gone right down that ravine many times. My dad and I were down there. We'd like to be down there next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now dad and I won't be able to go down that way. We'll have to come around. Anyway, I've always known that that's a private piece of property. So I'm very careful. Even if I see cars in that property, if I think the people that own it are there, it's like a cabin, then I don't go there. I don't. And if there are people clearly in that cabin, I won't fish in front of it. But boy, we all know that many people will and many guides will just because there's a great piece of water right in front of that cabin.
Absolutely.
And so if you're a guide who's like, oh, I'm going to just guide right in front of this cabin, it's going to happen. What Austin just described is going to happen. It's going to get shut down. And it's your fault.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry. It is.
So do you guys, Dom, you mentioned you saw quite a few guides out recently. We all can acknowledge the amount of guide traffic, whether you want to call it the COVID boom or whatever. It seems like a lot of people are into the sport, which is great, but then, you know, there's a lot of guides. Should the amount of guiding happening on particular waterways be limited?
Am I wrong, but do you guys know in Canada, do a lot of rivers have like river days that are allocated to guides? And
that's what
if
I've heard.
So, I'm pretty sure that is the case, and I was trying to briefly look at how that's even allocated, because I think it's really hard to just like reach in your pockets and pull out some sort of metric out of thin air that like what's reasonable, you know?
We have it here. And it's actually a big debate because they're trying to put it on the Madison and they're trying to potentially put it on the Yellowstone. But it exists, Trevor, on the Big Hole and the Beaverhead to where...
Really?
On Sundays, there's no guided float fishing.
Well, doesn't that just make Mondays more crowded?
That is the argument from the other side, right? That... It'll just cause us to push trips everywhere. But the gap in there is most people are only out here for 5 to 7 days. They're not driving here, right? They're all flying here. So it's a different it's a different beast, right? So to your point, Dom, I think it's harder, you know, for people to rearrange their trip out here because they're it's less accessible because they're on a plane timeline.
True.
But for me as like a local, I'm driving to the Big Hole on Sunday.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm there, man. It's way less crowded. I know it's going to be less crowded, and I stay away from Saturday. But you know what? That benefits the the outfitters because there's less public on the river on Saturday. And that's, it's not the entire river, Dom, it's sections. And so like there's particular sections that are non-guided on particular days. So the rotation over there works. It works so good. People are trying to plug it into the Madison.
At some point you have to have some kind of regulations to it, some kind of metrics, and you go, and it is going to be different for each river. You know, if the river is half as wide.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
So you feel like people are overall in favor of it, Grub?
Everybody but the outfitters.
Exactly. I mean, of course. Make a living off it.
Yeah. I mean, and that makes sense. I get it. And their argument is it'll just push, you know, traffic to other days, but something's got to give. Like,
yes,
there's my argument
to
them
is too
much. When you're in Montana and you look down river and see 42 boats,
it's insane.
That's not what it was supposed to be. And you know what? That's like, at what point does the outfitter responsible for the resource? And I've said this a million times before.
Yeah.
You know, and so you question them. They're the ones making money off it. So do they really have the best interest for the resource? You would think they would, because it's their livelihood, but are they trying to make as much money as they can when you have kind of a up and down industry, right? Yeah. Are you going to make it when it's good? You know, and hey, they have a right to make a living. And right now though, there's no restrictions, but because of what's happening,
there's going to be
clearly
most likely
most people think there should be some limitations. They've capped trips, you know, per outfit. They're doing things out here to try to, because it's obnoxious. Like I said, and you go, there's 8 weeks out of the summer where everybody tries to float down the river and you wait. People have waited 45 minutes to an hour to pull their boat out of the river.
Oh my gosh. I can't hardly imagine that.
Dude, it's so insane. Wild. Like any of the famous rivers here.
Disneyland.
Disneyland.
Well, it's like what it is, waiting in line for your ride.
But
every person on a boat, though, is taking one of those Disneyland trips, Austin, right? Some of those are like dedicated,
but it looks
diehard
like that
anglers.
When you're trying to get out.
Fair
enough.
Well,
and you know, the way that the outfitters or flash ups market things, you would never know. Most times what kind of a circus it is, but I have been seeing, you know, courtesy at the boat ramp, you know, some of these outfitters are like, hey, let's all be respectful out there because it is, everyone's trying to coexist.
That's good.
Yeah.
I don't have all the answers, right? But it clearly has become an issue, and maybe it's starting to become an issue there where reasonable people need to make some decisions, right? Should we cap it? Should we cap the number of trips each assigned angler can do? Or, you know, at what point is it, you know, the government getting involved too much, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a sticky subject.
I can't hardly imagine that happening around here. But then again, maybe 5-10 years from now, it will.
Yeah.
The story I told in the beginning, I mean, that was really too many people for that section of water. And I added to it. Again, hypocrisy right here, right? I added to it.
Right.
And I feel like for good reasons, right? Sure. I feel like, my people were learning things.
Right. And you can't...
I stand behind that.
Right. And you saw people, and I saw that day, you know, I'm floating and see 42 boats. And they're not all guided trips, okay? But there's a lot. You know, the 8 weeks in the summer, from July 1st through the end of August... there's a lot of guided trips out here. At what point, back to the original question, is it too much?
And
for me, I think it's, you know, if the fishing's affected greatly, we all know pressure affects.
That's too much. Yeah.
It's probably too much. Like if your catch rates are going down to subpar on a trout stream that's
even below 50% of what they should be.
Right. I mean, maybe we should think about that for a minute.
And all the pressure isn't only from guides, right? So when I was out on Saturday, there was people everywhere and the water was way too high for them to be there, but they weren't with guides. But, you know, sometimes the people we see on rivers are back because they were on a guided trip and they did well last time and now they're here again.
Fair enough.
But there's no getting around the fact that there's more people than ever. And the increased pressure isn't going anywhere, whether it's being guided or they're reading about it online or it's in a book somewhere. People who have interest in the sport is growing, and we have to learn some way to manage our expectations. Like, I know I can't show up April to June in my favorite river and, you know, in midday and expect to find any solace anymore. If I'm not the first person there or the very last person there at night, I'm not going to have what I want. And that's not being selfish or anything. That's just saying what the expectation is now for me. Heck, even a weekday, you can hardly get it anymore.
It's also where I think it makes such a big difference to be the voice that we are in this community, you know, as Troutbitten, because I do think it's a bit of, it's a smaller community than Groves, right? And I do think that whatever slice of the pie or percentage of the pie that you can make up of people in this area that have been guided by Troutbitten, read Troutbitten, or listen to our podcast, you hope that you're creating an angler on the water who isn't going to high hole each other, that's going to give each other space on the water. And you know, not everybody's going to do that. Not everybody's going to listen, but I, you know, I've been on the water many times over the past few years and had like just fantastic experiences with other anglers where they give me a ton of space or they are really conscientious. And I'm always thinking in my head, like, man, I bet they listen to the podcast or I bet they read.
They might.
You know, and it's not like we're the only source of this stuff either. And I also don't want to be that egotistical to think that.
And they're probably great people too.
Right. They're probably great people. But I think we all want to encourage more of that.
That's one of the cool things about guiding. I try to pass that down all the time. I just said it last week. I think it was on Tuesday. I was like, well, there was a guy that came upstream about 200 yards from us. And I said, well, there's nobody else out here. And the weather was bad. I said, so we're going to go way up above, give them this kind of space that we would want to have. And we did that. And then we saw nobody else for the rest of the day. Not every day is like that, right? I mean, he's talking April through May or April through early June, Austin. But then the rest of the year, there's not that many people. And there never will. I want to say there never will be. When the fishing gets tough, I don't think that you're going to find that many people. Obviously, you're not going to find as many people, I should say, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, as you do Saturday and Sunday.
Agree.
And how much is too much? Well, I will say, like, if you're a guide, here we are giving guides advice. It's almost none of our business, but I guess that's what I'm doing, right? Hypocrisy, here we go. If you're a guide, maybe don't guide the same water 4 out of 5 days a week. And then if you're a guide, and just because you always guide this one spot, if it's 9 o'clock, perhaps start earlier, but if it's 9 o'clock in the morning and you go around there and around the bend and you see like there's already two cars there, don't be the third car. Go find another spot. Right. Just like if you were an angler, go find another spot. I could tell you about a guide who guides for a fly shop who always guides the same spot. Maybe that's not fair. I just see that person always guiding the same spot, often like 3 or 4 days in a row. And I'm like, man, stop, man. Like, come on. Like, do they even eat your flies day after day? Is that too much? I guess that's the question, right? Is that, and maybe my perception, my perspective here is wrong, but we keep saying how much is too much. Right. To me, like, that's too much, man. Stop it. Am I wrong?
I think you're right. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
It's tough to regulate, you know, and it's the same thing here when I see the same guides launching the same float over and over, you know, but I'm listening to myself talking to their defense, like there's people out there that want to do it. So who's to say, you know, who are we to say they shouldn't do it? And back to the boat thing, the reality is of the rivers out here, most people don't have a boat.
Yeah.
And that's how you fish these rivers.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, well, I get it, right? You're out in Montana, you book a fishing trip, you're not going to book it on foot. Mm-hmm. You're going to be in a drift boat. I mean, that's just the way it is out here on a lot of the famous rivers. So I'm giving, you know, the number of boats a bad rap, but I'm also acknowledging that that's the main way to target these rivers. And
there's only so many launches too, right? I mean, access, you know, in and out.
And unless they buy a boat.
But having said that, is it going to be a bad thing to cap the number of trips? Not just for that outfitter, all the other people fishing that day? Does everybody benefit from capping it? And I think that's a tough thing to answer, but I think it's something that everybody needs to acknowledge without having any skin in the game. You know, is it better for the fish? Is it better for the client's experience? Is it better for the guide's experience because they're not battling to drop a boat behind 50 other boats, right? I know that's layered, but there's a lot to think about there.
Sounds like three different podcasts to me. Oak and Oscar is an American watch company that does things the right way, not the easy way, crafting mechanical timepieces that combine Swiss precision with American know-how. Oak and Oscar was founded in 2015, named after the owner's love of bourbon and his dog, Oscar. Their watches are built to withstand even the most adventurous fly angler. Our very own Austin Dando has been putting his Olmsted to the test since last year. Oak and Oscar is a watch company that loves fly fishing. Visit their website at oakandoscar.com/troutbitten. Mark your time on the water with Oak and Oscar. If you want to be an efficient and effective angler, you need to have your fly storage dialed in, ensuring that you have everything the fish might want to eat while also staying organized and focused. Fulling mill fly boxes are designed for just this purpose. With no frills, these boxes are built to work. With custom-made, durable polycarbonate shells, they're lined with dense, slotted foam that holds everything from streamers to tiny nymphs and dries. They feature strong magnetic closures that only open when you want them to. From their pocket box, which fits in your shirt pocket, to their Tactical Max, which holds 960 flies, Fulling Mill's range of 8 boxes has something for every angler. Grab yours at fullingmill.com or ask for them at your local dealer.
I think the most important thing, though, is if you're hurting the fish.
We haven't even talked about that much.
I think all of us could probably agree with that. You know, Grobe touched on it a little bit, but we talk about too much. If it's resulting in negative impact on fish populations and the enjoyment of our sport, then that's too much.
Yeah, that might be the deciding factor right there. That's
right,
true.
And it's going to be different for everybody. But to me, that's too much. Hmm.
If it changes if it changes the habits of the trout.
Yeah, that's always going
to
change, right?
We talked not too long ago about like what angler pressure does to the fish, what it does to the fishing, and we acknowledged that it doesn't take too much angler pressure before the fish habits start to change.
Yeah, sure. They might be harder to catch, but if there's less of them or if their health has gone somehow
down,
that
is a different thing.
Then that's a different problem.
Fair.
What you guys don't have to deal with that we have to deal with here is usually the highest concentration of guided trips typically can coincide with the only 4 weeks of the season with thermal issues.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
In August.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, lately,
tough.
Things have been warm.
Yeah.
Water's
extra
low,
warm.
And it's just then all of a sudden the trout populations are declining. You know, is it a fungus or is it really us? Are we just beating the snot out of these fish and they're having trouble surviving, right? So then what do you do? Cap, you know, the state does hoodow. I think hoodow is wonderful. I think it doesn't prohibit fishing, but it limits. You can't fish after 2 p.m.
Yeah,
I think that's a simple, cool way to mitigate some of those risks.
Mm.
But the boat launches get even more crowded
in the morning.
Because then everybody's launching at, you know, the same time to be off the river at 2:45. It's crazy. Oof.
Things have changed a lot just in your short time out there. I say short, but what's it, 10 years?
100%. Way more crowded, especially in the summer months. COVID did whatever COVID did. It definitely pushed people out. But
20% maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it bumped people. But you know what? I always say, at what point did those people not have a good time? Will it all come full circle and kick the outfitter in
you
the
ass? You have to wonder.
Right?
I mean, they're definitely seeing that. You talk to some of the companies in the industry, they'll tell you that COVID bump is coming down.
Yep. Everybody's saying that, including
everybody,
the outfitters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reality. There's a bump and then there's a drawback for sure.
Yeah.
Of everything. We've talked about a lot.
But this has been good though.
It's good.
We have no answers.
There are no answers, right?
Yeah. And I feel like we're bringing up a lot of things and I don't think
answers.
We're going to wrap anything up with conclusions or
no.
Here's the 5 actionable items based on this. But I think
No.
I think we're content with that. I think we're just trying to bring up some of the issues and be humble enough to say that we might all be part of it a little bit, while at the same time wanting to do the best by the resource as well.
I don't know about being content with it, but I understand
being part of it for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just acknowledging that we are part of the problem, mm-hmm. if you're guiding. But I like to think we're part of the solution, or the reason that I guide again is because I said the other day when I was giving a presentation, I said that people who fish more are happier. I've thought about that a lot. I know I'm happier, and I know what fishing has done for my life. And I'm talking regardless of trout bidding. I'm just saying, when I go fishing, I feel this way. And I know each one of you here would agree. Like, you go fishing because of what it makes you feel, because it makes you happier. When you return to your family, you go, you're just a happier person. You're like, oh, I can, you know, I'm a better dad. I'm a better husband. And so I feel like passing that on is my responsibility. Not even just, it makes me money. But I told you before, I'm kind of stubborn about all that stuff. I'm going to do what I think is kind of what I like to do and then what is right. And I believe that passing that kind of stuff down makes the world a better place.
I agree.
And then at some point, too many anglers is going to become too much. And then that experience won't be what we're looking for the next angler. And they'll go, man, there's five people above me, five people. This is dumb. You know, 15 people I saw. Ah, that's not cool. We don't want that. It's so sticky.
Or so are we all in favor of a decline in fishing?
No, not necessarily. I will say this, man. I've thought about this a lot.
I am.
Fair. I would say I'm in favor of more fishermen exploring more waters. Stop going to the catch and release or the special regs areas or straight to your most popular stream, Matt, or ours. Go to anywhere where there are trout, well, whatever species you're chasing, but here we're trout bitten. Go to where there are fish and catch them. The biggest concentration, we all see this, is in the most popular spots.
Yeah.
Branch out from the most popular spots. Matt, what were you going to say, though?
The FWP, or whatever organization, leads your state, right? That's Montana. It's Pennsylvania Fish and Boat.
PFBC. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You would think, as they drive around, and they see all this interest, though. I see it as people are craving these waters. It's why they go there. Why in the hell wouldn't you give them more of that when you could by extending these areas, stop the stocking?
Oh, the special regs.
But allow the wild trout to flourish. And then and then you would stop. Like, if you go to any delayed harvest on the first day it's open, there's people everywhere. That's actually a good thing.
It's like a guarantee that there are fish there.
Right. Yes. But it's like, guys, if you just saw this, people like to get out and fish. I always said that the state could do so good by just picking a handful of these delayed harvests, stock them in the fall, and catch and release all the way, you know, like, just have them good. People like to catch fish, or in places where they reproduce. Just pick two, stop stocking them from the top to the bottom, and have them open, right? Just, it's open season.
Right.
They might be shocked at what they see. To me, it's crazy that they don't see all these crowds, and, you know, you guys are, everyone's battling, and they likely on some of these waters could extend that. Not all of them, but some of them. They could add mileage, spread people out. Like, why not?
And then guides, again, could take people to places where they're sure there are fish, and where there would be more and more places where people, I'll fish there. Oh, I read about that in the guidebook, because it goes seven miles down instead of 2 miles down from whatever.
I'd just say, you know, it's really, we talked about being part of the problem. It's really easy to be part of the problem if you're not a guide too. Like, you could think about it in any way that you attract extra attention to a place that maybe already has too much.
Fair.
If you're posting a picture online with an easily recognizable river feature, you're part of the problem. Don't say anything else. So just be conscious of what you share and how you share it, and
use AI. One of the last fish pictures I posted was the background was entirely AI. And nobody will ever know.
Josh was on Mars.
That's what Wilds Media has become, everybody. Right? It's just AI. Just AI.
The fish is real. Everything else in the picture was fake.
Yes, nice. We talked around it pretty good. What did we miss? Anything else, guys?
Man, I'm sure we missed a lot.
I know we did. Again, you could have, I mean it, like three different podcasts. Well, that one thing you were talking about. I had notes, and we didn't cover half the notes.
Good thing and a bad thing, right?
Mm-hmm. This is one of those podcasts where we are not trying to teach or tell you much of anything, right?
There's so many trade-offs to everything,
just,
right?
Just talking through it.
You extend the special regs, but I don't want that guy down there. extend the special regs, well, then now he's not up there instead. It's there's no perfect answer.
No, that's fair.
I'll say one more thing in positivity. Please. About guides, like as the non-guide of the group. I've had, I think, two guided trips ever, but
one was with me.
One was with the Dom. Yeah,
before we knew each other. That's the day we met.
Yep. And another was with George Daniel, also in this area. And both were for pretty specific reasons. As I was learning to expand my skills in certain areas, I kind of had different things that I wanted to learn. And it was huge. I mean, one day spent with each of you leapfrogged my development, I think, far beyond what I could have done on my own. And I love to consume knowledge. It's just part of how I like to approach different things that I enjoy. And yet the ability to just hear feedback from, I honestly, both of you guys interacted much as coaches do, you know, and I think there was something really valuable about that. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, I'll always be grateful for it, because I think what I learned in those 2 days went a long way to pointing me in the right direction. And it was kind of a gut check, you know, of like, hey, I'm learning all this stuff. I'm doing all this stuff on my own. It's like, is any of this right? Like, is this, where do you see weaknesses, or where do you see that I could improve? And you can only self-assess so much. And the trout are obviously part of that. You know, they'll tell you if you're doing things right or not most of the time. But it was really, I thought it was awesome. And I'm super happy that there are guides like you guys out there, because for somebody who really wants to learn and wanted to expand their skill set, or kind of have that coach type relationship with a teacher, with a guide, I think it was perfect.
That's neat. Like we said, there are different types of trips.
Yeah.
All right, there it is. So this topic is a tough one. As you've heard, the ethics of guiding are sticky. Fishing is different. Our rivers are not golf courses. The golf pro at the local club is probably happy to put more people on the course with the knowledge to play a better game. But the entanglements of putting more anglers on a public resource are different. When is it too much? When are we doing more harm than good? There's a lot more to all this than added angler pressure, too. In many states, the way guiding is intertwined with stalking makes all of this very, very sticky. I like Trevor's point that a good guide is like a coach. I think it's our job as guides to educate and to help anglers learn the right things. So trout fishing is a positive experience that can help carry anglers through their lives, maybe even help them get through some of their toughest times, and overall make the world a better place. Sounds idealistic, right? But I believe it. We also talked here about different kinds of guided trips, and I think we can all agree that the Disneyland-style trip, where a non-angler buys a one-day ticket for that fly fishing ride in Montana, is perhaps the least valuable. Sure, there's something there, but it stands in stark contrast to the guided trip where an angler learns tactics for the future, where they also learn the value of wild trout and clean, cold water. Fishing guides are often heralded as the ambassadors to our sport. This is true, and it's a big responsibility, so we must continue to assess and evaluate. Are we doing more harm than good? That's the question that we're asking of ourselves here. Of course, we don't have the answers. We're searching for the truth, for the best way forward, like everyone else. And by asking these questions and opening these discussions, maybe we'll all get to the other side with the resource in even better shape than we found it. That's the goal. So Pittsburgh Matt Grobe, will you read us out?
Remember, the Trout Bitten Project is a free resource for all anglers. The Trout Bitten website hosts over 1,000 articles with endless stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu and through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and tags too. Be sure to find the Trout Bitten YouTube channel, now featuring the Trout Bitten Tip Series, the Fish and Film Series, and the Trout Bitten Fly Box, all in collaboration with Wilds Media. Thank you for listening to the Trout Bitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave a comment, because that really helps. Until next time, friends, fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
Look at the size of that trout.
Hey, now.
I don't want that guy down there.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, he's not up there instead.
I'm going to go high-hole him. Hey, now.